got it. Here we go. There's Tom there. There you are there. There I am here. Sean is out today. He is taking a class on veterinary medicine, Tom, in order to work with the new horses. That's something that Bonneville has set up. So that's where he is today. It's a one-day class on veterinarian, equestrian medicine. I don't know how much you learn. But he's going to be tomorrow back with a horse and in good health, and that's where he is today. So,
all right then. Why don't you have a horse?
All right. Well, things move fast, right? You get a call from somebody who says, "Hey, Kevin, can you come speak at the Rotary Club?" Yeah, sure. When is it? Oh, it's the breakfast. It's going to be a virtual thing. Yeah, okay, I can do that. And then how long do you need me to talk for? Oh, probably no more than 20 minutes. Can you take questions and answers? Yeah, sure. I think he took questions and answers.
Yeah,
and did he? Did he take Q&A?
Yeah, he did. It was like 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's it's pretty typical fare, right? You go in there, and normally the breakfast, the Bellevue Rotary, the smaller one, there's two of them. There's the great big one, and then there's the smaller one. I think this is the smaller one that was meeting, and I don't think this was live, right? This was all Zoomed. So I guess you assume, I don't know, but
no, it had to be live, John, because they took questions.
So they were all meeting there in the room?
No. I mean, I think it was all done virtually, but you would have a face come up, and then you'd hear this. They show this phone image, and then you would hear it. So,
right. No. I'm saying live, meaning live
in person.
This is in the virtual world.
Okay,
you're sitting there. You
yes.
can't see anybody. You don't know if you're getting big laughs or not. You kind of just throw a bunch of stuff out there. Maybe you do get a laugh. Maybe you don't get a laugh. I'm not defending Kevin. I know him. My relationship with him is I've always felt him to be. He's a really decent guy. I liked working with him. I think he's incredibly smart. He joined the Mariners in 1996, and he's doing this virtual Zoom thing, and somebody took it, recorded it, which I guess maybe he didn't think they're going to be doing that, and then released it, right?
Yeah. No.
I got a bunch of cuts.
Yeah.
Do you care about
okay.
any one particular cut you want to hear?
Well, no, I think let's just get a smattering. I think we have to make sure that we reference the Japanese player cuts, but I think other things we could use as well. But
and I have to compliment, you know, Kyle Seager is a veteran player. He's probably overpaid, but his attitude, I mean, this has been a tough couple of years where we traded veterans and came in with young kids who are learning. And Kyle Seager has stayed positive and has had a tremendous attitude. There's been several times. Well, that's why I whispered in his ear that he's going to be a Mariner Hall of Famer, because it's got to be some tough years for him. But he's been positive. He's been upbeat. And it's really been fun to watch him grow.
Okay. So the only thing in that, two or three sentences, I think. The only thing that you might object to is the fact that he's overpaid. He is probably, after Felix Hernandez, he's probably been the best Mariner we've had in the last few years. He's been our star. He may end up indeed in the Mariner Hall of Fame. And to just kind of offhandedly mention, he's been overpaid. That's not a sin of huge proportions, but it's unnecessary. Why throw? He's throwing a bone to Seager, talking about how great he's been, but at the same time, he's overpaid. He didn't need to do this. That doesn't help. But the thing is,
I'm going to say this. I've said
a thousand
this. In defense
cuts.
Of somebody who sometimes shoots himself in the foot.
Yes,
and then right when you are doing these things in a Zoom world, do you hear Kyle's a great guy, probably overpaid. If he were standing there up at the dais, that would get a laugh. That would get a laugh. Yeah, because it's like, Kyle's a great guy, probably overpaid. Ha ha. Because I mean, like, wow, that's wow for the guy, the head of the Mariners, to make that joke. It's a joke kind of thing. You can't hear any kind of reaction to it. I don't know. You know, gonna keep
Kyle
going.
Singer
again, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying in
venue no, you're explaining
of a Zoom
it.
Call.
Okay.
And having no idea whether it's being recorded. All right, here we go.
Okay. No, and I think, by the way, John, I want to correct. Things I've read, I think he knew. This is they just do this, as a matter of course, I thought, that he knew that it was recorded. That's one of the things that people can't understand why he says, because when you're at this kind of a Zoom meeting, these are the kinds of things that are public, And I thought, so I'm not sure that what you say is right, that he didn't know. This was not seen as like a hidden camera kind of expose.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing surreptitious about it. Nothing Machiavellian.
And by the way,
I've done this rotary breakfast. I've spoken there in person, and nobody records it when you're there in person. But on this, you could record it.
But on
a
Zoom call, you probably, okay.
Whether he knew it was recorded or not, I don't know. He's talking about interpreters for players.
It frustrates me. For instance, we just rehired Iwakuma. Iwakuma was a pitcher for us for a number of years. Wonderful human being. His English is terrible. He wanted to get back into the game. And he came to us, and we quite frankly want him as our Asian scout interpreter. What's going on in the Japanese league? He's coming to spring training, and I made the statement: I'm tired of paying his interpreter, because when he was a player, you know, we pay Iwakuma X, but we also had to pay $75,000 a year to have an interpreter with him. His English suddenly got better. His English got better when we told him that.
So, Larry Stone.
But I'm bumped, Tom. I'm kind of in a bump bump on that.
Oh, no. You too. Okay.
Oh, really? Wow. That's really politically incorrect to say that the guy needed interpreter. He didn't want to pay $70,000. And then when he told him that, then his English got better?
It sounds unnecessarily snotty. But as Larry Stone says in his column, you know, there's so much wrong with that stream of thought, starting with the fact that this multi-billion-dollar organization, which has thrown tens of millions of dollars at mediocre ballplayers, would begrudge a native Japanese player a $75,000 interpreter, a service that's provided to virtually every Japanese player in the majors. Why say something like that? And why do that? And I think I think these are like a series of, you know, like 1,000 cuts. It's because he said so many of these things in a 45-minute session that's getting him in trouble and got him in hot water. But now, do we have the cut where he talks about, we have two young superstars that they think are going to be the outfield for the next 6 or 7 years, may make it one of the best outfield in the majors. And one of them is Julio Rodriguez. And what he says about Julio Rodriguez, and who is he's a very charismatic player, according to Larry Stone.
Here it is.
Here's what
Julio
he has to say
Rodriguez
about
Rodriguez has got a personality bigger than all of you combined. He is loud. He is his English is not tremendous, but him and Kelenic are very good friends. He's a year behind Kelenic. He will probably be here in everybody says 2021. He won't be here till 2022 or 2023.
Okay.
So again, like you and I, John, admit we don't follow the Mariners like we follow the Seahawks. So we're not familiar with these players. But Larry Stone, who covers the team, or is a sports writer for the Seattle Times, at least, he talks about. So it's one thing to criticize Japanese players or Hispanic players' English. He says it's uncalled for. It's unneeded. You don't need to bring it up. But if you do, at least it should be accurate. Larry Stone claims that this observation is almost completely, utterly, and shockingly wrong. Rodriguez's English is superb, and one of the most impressive things about him, he's only like 19 or 20, I think. Rodriguez is friendly, engaging, and insists on doing all of his interviews in English, of which he has perfect command, despite growing up in the Dominican Republic and not coming to the United States until this past season. So
he got confused with somebody else?
No, I think this might indicate that he is just that Kevin, your friend Kevin, is like he's ready to jump on foreign players and criticize them for things that he's assuming is the case and smearing them all with a broad brush, even when that's irrelevant.
Okay.
Again, I don't know why he would need it. And he says, this is a chance, Larry Stone says, this is a chance for him to sing the praises of his upcoming new outfielder. And instead, he throws in, he says, it doesn't matter if his English isn't that good. Why does he even bring it up? And it turns out, in this case, if Larry Stone's to believe, his English is excellent.
Okay, here he is saying something
Julio
nice about
Rodriguez has got a personality bigger than all of you combined. He is loud. He is, his English is not tremendous.
Okay. There is an ongoing debate in baseball, and you'll hear it from people in the media that are willing to talk about it. One of the problems for the fans is the lack of English to the player fan relationship. Mm-hmm. When the fan can't understand the player and the player can understand the fan, you lose the connection, right? So then what happens is for a lot of these teams that are guiding guys out of the Dominican Republic that are great baseball players, they really want them to be out in front to speak for the team. They want them to be at the press conferences. They want their personality, want all of this sort of stuff, but they also want them to be able to speak English, because they need that in order to keep the fans feeling the connection to the players, right? If you don't have an ability to communicate, this is a problem with which Major League Baseball has been working on. One, to get the English players to learn to speak Spanish, and to get the Spanish players to learn to speak English, right?
Yes.
So this is
and
part
in this
of
case,
it. But, okay, again, we're offended that he said his English might not be that good, when apparently his English is good. So
again, according to Larry Stone, and Larry as it's Stone. Pointed out, somebody else, baseball writer Joe Sheehan. In the two most popular Mariners this century, Japanese player who used a translator and a young Latin player who learned English, we're talking about Ichiro and Felix Hernandez, that does sound culturally insensitive or tone-deaf or unnecessary. It wasn't like they said, how good are his skills? He brings this up. Larry Stone points out, why you're asked to talk about this young upcoming character, why do you talk about his English skills? You know, his language skills. He's not, as he points out, not Winston Churchill. If we had a winning team, it wouldn't matter as much if we could understand, his translator or not.
Okay. Anyway. I don't know. In context, I don't know the context of it. I don't know if he was speaking about others as well and generally talking about how the ability to communicate not only on the field between players, but also to have marquee players speak English so that the fans can feel the affinity. The thing about Ichiro is Ichiro's bat spoke for him.
Exactly.
And Ichiro could, and the rumor was that he spoke English very well, but chose not to, just didn't want to, which was part of the enigma of Ichiro, right?
Yeah.
Stands up there, does the thing, puts his arm out, slides the sleeve up, couple things, bang, and he's on first base. So the thing about Ichiro was he was always got a hit. It didn't matter, and he didn't say anything, didn't need to. Again, that was sort of what his thing was. All right, one more, and then here we go. Ready?
He won't commit beyond his free agent years. I wouldn't say he's unhappy. He appreciates the offer. He just refused to sign it. He thinks he's going to be that good, and he thinks he will be a very well-paid player after 6 years, and I think he might be right.
Yeah, that's about the other young guy. It's Jared Kellenick. We offered him – apparently he's under contract for like 6 years, and we offered him an extension, and he says he turned down the extension because he thinks he's going to be a bigger star at the end of year six.
Okay.
I don't think that is
Do you care about – do you want any more? I mean, do you hear any
No, no,
more?
No. I think that's good. I think basically he lost his job. He's the CEO. He's the, the top of that organization, and it was a bad look. A lot of people in baseball were cringing. He alienated a lot of the fans, they say. And I don't think either of us qualify as pure, true Mariners fans, but the way he talked about how the reason they didn't – here's one of the problems just in terms of baseball. So we don't have a very good team right now. We're bottoming out. We're going to rebuild. And they've decided that they don't want to start these two young up-and-comers there, I think, at the AAA level, until the season starts, because they don't want their service contract to run out. So I'm guessing it's like a six-year contract once you hit the major leagues or something. Anyway, they don't want their service contracts. So they're purposely keeping them down in the minor leagues. And we're bringing in, mediocre utility players to play now, and they say, well, what are you doing that? Well, and he admits, well, we want to, get the best out of it, so we are holding them back. And so their agents are mad because he thinks he's good enough to play now. It's not a baseball decision. It's a money-saving position, and Mariner fans are fed up with Mariners not spending more money on the players to get a winner on the team, since we have the worst record in Major League Baseball over the last 19 years, apparently.
Well, Kevin has been there since 96, and now he has a chance to spend more time with his family and to pursue other interests, as they say, right?
That's right. I think loose lips, if you watch it, it's really interesting to watch him. He is not – it's not like he's flaming, mad about anything. It's just he's too comfortable, I think. In his position, he just – these are the kind of things, my guess is, John, as you probably know, since you run in these kinds of circles, people probably say much worse things behind closed doors. The fact that this was out in public, he's just got a little too comfortable with his opinions.
I think, again, if I don't know if he was aware of it was being videotaped.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll have to clarify that.
Differently.
Yeah.
What's that?
I guess we'll have to try to track that down. Maybe someone over at 710 ESPN knows for sure one way or the other.
Right. Okay. And, all right, in today's highly sensitive world that we are living in, they have to get rid of him, right? Because look at the kerfuffle that has come up.
Yeah.
Because
he talks image is important to a team that's struggling. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They've been struggling for a while.
So do you think it's worse or better that if he knew that he was speaking on the record, in effect, being filmed, or do you think it's worse if he didn't? No.
Right.
That's but a good question. I mean, either way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, if he knew that it was being recorded and he said it anyway, I guess maybe maybe he doesn't think what he's saying is that controversial.
Yes. That's what I think.
That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And his attitude certainly wasn't. And by the way, this was done on February 5th. It didn't cause a controversy until it was posted over the weekend and people saw it and go, holy smokes. So all the Bellevue Rotary people that were listening to it didn't hear anything outrageous to them.
All right. The fact that politics is seeping into every aspect of everybody's life, I have noticed, and Tom, you've noticed, although you and I don't spend hardly any time at all on social media, we report on the stories that spring up from social media, i.e. the tragic story the other day, Skagit Valley, person comes out, tries to steal some guy's sign, then they get into a fight, person runs into the house, shoots and kills a woman, right? I mean, and that it had to be about politics, fights about politics, the guys that the knuckleheads that ran in to the Capitol on January 6th. That's about politics. BLM Marxist lighting the cities on fire across the country. That's politics. And this piece in Reason says that it seems to have, in a way, sort of become almost cellular in absolutely everyone's statement, action, anything, that people are putting people in categories of left, right, red, or blue, and that's all anybody sees nowadays.
Yeah, I think you could make an argument that it might be good that people take politics seriously enough that it does impact the way they live their life. I mean, I can see that kind of a positive spin. If you don't really care about politics, a lot of bad things can happen and nobody's really paying attention. So I can imagine that there is a counter to this argument. But be that as it may, the thrust of this article, I think, really raises a kind of a more profound view of life, which is if you start identifying politics as the go-to reason for every activity, you end up restricting and hurting yourself and potentially society at large. One of the things they start off with it's a very kind of squishy topic, but this idea of friendships, because people now take politics so seriously, like you and I, we have practically opposite politics.
Yes.
We would never be friends if we led with our politics. Because we would just see each other as the enemy, and yet that might deprive us of a rich friendship that we could agree on and help each other and enjoy each other on in all sorts of other aspects and kind of isolate the political stuff as, okay, well, that's something we don't agree with. It'd be like if somebody has a strong religious belief one way and somebody else has a different religion. Can you have an ecumenical move, or do you just insist, well, no, my belief in God is right and your belief in God is wrong, and that prevents you from a rich society, and then you project that out. What if we did that societally? If we only take jobs where people are think like us, that might mean that we're taking a less fulfilling job because we want to be with people we, agree with, and we don't expand our horizons by getting a job that we're better suited for, perhaps, and maybe even pays more because we're so determined by the kind of politics we want to share with people in our job.
I am going to flip all the cards and go right to blame it on social media, that the engagement that people have. Let's go back to the 1960s and 70s and 80s. Let's go there. If you were in a bowling club and I was reading a study on it, the bowling clubs that are still around, do you talk politics? They said, no, you even know the politics of these other people, not as well as I know them as a bowler, as a guy on my team. We kid each other about the politics, but the main reason they're there is to bowl. It's the love of bowling. If you're sitting at home and you're flipping through your Facebook and now you're going to engage with somebody and hate them because of their politics, then it's all about the only reason you're meeting them is always in some proverbial virtual back alley where you're duking it out over something somebody said, some feeling, some facts, whatever. So those are your only engagements. People are not parts of organizations where they're brought into that organization for the love of whatever, model airplanes. Politics takes a back seat to the greater joiner, which is a love of something else. But if all you have is politics, the story about the woman that wrote the piece for the LA Times who couldn't bring herself to thanking her neighbor, what a missed opportunity. Did the guy that plowed her driveway, did he care about her politics? I don't know. I don't think so, or he probably would not have plowed the driveway. Or maybe he does know her politics, but plowed her driveway anyway. But she can't bring herself to thank the guy. So you and I meet on a variety of topics, Tom. We hit our heads together when it comes to political stuff sometimes. But, I mean, overall, most people are not engaging with one another. They're getting further and further siloed away from real relationships of something else that means something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. Now, again, just for the sake of argument, there is a counter. If we were living oblivious to politics and something really bad was happening in our society, I think it might be beholden to us to actually take politics more seriously. I don't know that I am opposed to people taking politics seriously because I do think it's a reflection of your attitude toward life. I do think that is an interesting, I mean, you mentioned the 60s. My God, I lived through the 60s. You were younger than I was, so maybe you don't think of yourself as living through the 60s. I was a kid, but I was a sentient kid at the time. I was aware of politics. I can't think of a time where people hated each other more for, you know, your anti-war, your pro-war, your Nixon, or, you know, I mean, there were a lot of divisions and hippies and all of that. But maybe it's, but the thing is, I do know that there were family fallouts. In my own extended family, there are some people for Goldwater and Johnson, and there were falling outs at that score. But I don't think that it was as endemic as it might be now. And you're right, social media, because we're so much aware. If it wasn't for social media, most of us wouldn't know who our extended friends' politics, tend to be, I guess.
But when you say politics, Tom, you know that only a third of Americans can name the First Amendment and what it is. And you know that 60 or 70% of Americans don't know the three branches of the government. So their knowledge of politics, I think you're being a little too generous with the word politics. I think what they know is the stuff that they think that they're losing, that someone's taking from them, you might fall into the category of politics.
Yeah.
Then that's just generally status and power. I have the power. It's being taken from me by this group, or I don't have any power because it's been taken from me by that group. So then it's status, power, and then intersectionality, and then multiculturalism, and then you get all the other stuff that goes with it, oppressor, oppressed, and then that for them is politics. It's their own personal life, their own biases, and then it goes under the category of politics.
So maybe you're right. Maybe politics is quite. In the article, they talk about political polarization. So maybe it's the polarization that we're feeling in this country. And I think you're right. Not that many people are interested in arguing the capital gains tax. I mean, it's like they're not into policy like that, but they're aware of. And that presidential election sort of bring that out, too. You have big symbols. So Trump is a big symbol and Biden is a big symbol of how you see the world. And I think that's where the partisanship comes in. Not arguing like over the soda tax, which I think you can make reasonable arguments on both sides. It's not a policy issue. It's more a temperament issue about how you see the world, perhaps. Polarization.
I don't see it getting much better much sooner.
Oh, I do, so let's fight about it. I'll beat you into submission.
Yeah, I'll show you peace.
That's right.
Here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well. Come on into that State Roofing text line at 98973. Be a big part of the show. Teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar is going to be able to choose the letter of the day with the help of Jacob and you as well. Just a quick story that it's nice to see. The war on drugs is still going, Tom. The federal agent has been able to seize $2.8 million. Oh, and that's great. Get it?
Oh, you're so clever. I love the story just because I think of the kind of the imagination, you know, the creativity involved in this. We ended an earlier segment with Hannah talking about this new effort at trying to get COVID impacted students to come up with this creative exercise mm-hmm. and the kind of a contest and competition. I think these are the kind of ideas you could come up with if it didn't involve drugs. I love this. Mm-hmm. Apparently, $2.8 million worth of cocaine was snuck in by frosting cornflakes. Now, I don't know how this was done. I don't know. I know what a bowl of frosted flakes looks like, so I don't know if it really looked like it or if they just caked the stuff in it. But I think that's hilarious and brilliant of somebody to try to think. I can just imagine all these little people, you know, these people with their little brushes, like brushing on to make it look like it's actually cereal. Unfortunately, there was a drug detector dog that that mm-hmm. caught onto it and, you know, sort of blew their story. But I just think how painstaking it must be to try to do something like that.
Well, yeah, somebody has to come up with a clever idea of getting into the country.
Yeah.
I don't want to make it seem like I hang around with the kind of a rough crowd, but here's a...
You do know people ready? With money.
Okay, get this. Guy and his girlfriend are down in Mexico, and on the beach, they'll sell you like an eight ball of cocaine or something like that, right? So the guy runs into this one guy, goes, hey, how about a kilo? Really? Yeah. I'll sell it to you for this amount of money. You can sneak it in, right? And here's how to sneak it in. The guy, the Mexican guy, gives this guy that I sort of know some information on how to sneak it in. The minute he gets to the airport, guess who catches him?
The dog.
The police, right?
Okay.
He goes into jail in Mexico. They put the girl in one jail. They put the guy in the other jail. And he calls up this other guy that I know and says, I need $25,000 to get out of here. You got to come down. They say, I need $25,000. The guy that I know takes the $25,000, goes down, gives it to the police there in Mexico. And they're like, okay, bye-bye. And they let him go. So then afterwards, they look into it. The drug dealer basically says to the cops, hey, you want to make some money? I'm going to give this guy a kilo. You give me back the drugs. You catch him. I'll tell you who he is. I'll set them all up for you, and I'll get you. And you get $25,000. You get it. You let him go. Is that not? I mean, when you think about it, like, okay, well, there's a quick way because the police are so unbelievably corrupt down there. The judges are corrupt. Everybody's bought off by the drug dealers. There's three main drug dealers that basically operate all of Mexico, and they are the ones that have control over this. So every once in a while, they'll stick somebody with a big chunk of coke, and they get stuck right there in Mexico, and then the money comes back. The cops are happy, and the Americans are like, whew, God, I can't believe that almost happened to me. And off they go to tell a good story at a bar. How about that?
I guess the thing is, to me, if you sneak something in by bribing somebody, that does not have that kind of spark of creativity I'm looking at. I prefer someone painstakingly painted the cornflakes. You just bite somebody off. How clever is that?
That's not clever. Right. Well, these guys, Tom, they're not applying for the clever stuff. They're just running the mill. Criminals.
And I hate to think, John, that somebody... all yeah. judges, yeah. you said all judges, all Mexican judges yeah. are not corrupt. Right?
Okay.
Scott.
Why wouldn't they be?
Well, because some people actually believe in their oath.
The people I know that live in Mexico tell me that the whole country.
Oh, I know. I know its reputation, and who am I to doubt its reputation? I just can't imagine that it's 100%. That's all I'm saying,
okay.
John.
There's one guy. All right, sure, there's one guy. Yeah. All right.
Good.
All right. And again, that is no reflection of the type of people I hang around with.
I'll say, yeah, that's right.
I overheard this. And I just heard from that person. They go, thank God you didn't do the thing where you fake names, because it's pretty easy to think.